go through this, and I spent a lot of time thinking about this whole aspect of leadership and give you a foundation for your success. And that's what I want you to think about as leadership. Because as you consider what this is and why I think it's a foundation, you're at the point in your careers and beginning your careers or thinking about beginning your careers in which you look at a lot of different people. You look at a lot of different people in lots of different roles. You also imagine yourself maybe someday being like Lee Burris.
No.
Well, maybe not.
No.
Or like Dana, or like Kevin, or like your faculty advisors out there thinking, will I someday have a role like they have? And so it is not too early to start thinking about how do you prepare yourself for leadership in the future? Because when you really begin to think about leadership, what is it and what isn't it? And so as we kind of go through these questions, here's your first set of questions. Who do you view as leaders? Who are leaders to you? Anybody? Who's a leader today?
Anyone in a position of authority.
Got any specific names?
Dana.
She told me there would be 21 K-State people here. That is a position of authority. So yes? Who has positions of authority?
Obama.
Obama. President Obama is a leader, right? Who else?
You do.
Why do I have position of authority?
You're director of the Ames Lab.
All right, I'm the director of a laboratory. Name some other people you view as leaders.
My parents.
Your parents. Why?
Because, you know, they always tell me what to do and looking up to them. So.
Okay, all right. Who else? What's that?
My professor.
Are you a professor? Professors are leaders in a way. Because when he asked that question, you know, who do you see as a leader out there? One of the things we often ask is to ask people to bring a picture of who they view as a leader and why. Because as soon as I asked that question, I'm sure every one of you had an image that popped into your mind of who you viewed as a leader. And when that image pops in there, what's it carry with it? It carries with it the attributes that you associate with that person that makes them that leader. And we're going to end today by talking about those attributes because that's the foundation of what we're going to do that. If you're kind of going through that, we're going to come back and we're going to focus on critical values, what you consider as life values, a number of different things. Politicians, do we consider them leaders?
Not very good ones.
Why not?
They pull the truth and sometimes live on that line between truth and lying. And they try to get people to believe them too so they can get votes.
Okay. Perpetual campaigners, right? We have all sorts of interesting terms for those people. Why do politicians go astray? We could have a whole hour and a half on that. Why do politicians go astray?
Personal gain.
Personal gain?
They want to stay in power.
Want to stay in power?
Money.
Money? What corrupts leaders? That's really the question. What corrupts leaders? I mean, we see a lot of corruption in our leadership today, don't we? I see a lot of heads nodding. What causes that path of corruption?
Politics.
What?
Greed.
Greed?
Authority.
Authority? Power? Anything else?
Lost connection to their leading.
Lost connection to who they're leading. Because it really fits into that next question. Who do they lead? Who do leaders lead? Well, think about this. It's not a trick question, folks. Followers, all right. Look at a very simple course. Leaders have followers. Go back to our politician question. Why do politicians get reelected? They want to keep, yeah. They know how to keep their power, they know how to promise. Anything else? Any other reason?
Persuasion.
Persuasion? The art of the promise? We'll talk about that a little bit in there.
If you have money, you have lots of money.
Okay. Sure. We have
more followers than others.
That's right. They got more followers than other people. All you had to have was one more follower than the other person, right? Leaders have to have followers. What about our followers? Who are followers? Who are the followers?
People who aren't the leaders.
People who aren't the leaders. See? Any other attribute of followers?
People that look to someone else for direction.
Okay. A lot of people want somebody to tell them what to do, where to go, how to get there. A lot of people are very happy to have somebody else make a decision for them, correct? Let me personalize it just a minute for you. How many of you have taken absolute ownership in your undergraduate program? Samantha? Okay, how so?
Just like the program, and when I first started college, my particular advisor was new at scheduling courses, and actually started ag communication, and so when she scheduled my courses, I had a lot of issues with actually meeting the requirements for my degree. I was put in like higher level courses than what I needed to be, and when those ended up transferring into like the computer system, a lot of them were actually qualifications for my degree. And so I ended up having to take the initiative on going through courses, looking up requirements, and doing it myself.
Okay. Anybody else? Everybody else just has done what Dan has told you to do, right?
Oh, they work with their advisors.
Yeah.
Then we just double check.
Yeah, I only had a few required classes from undergraduate, so I basically was able to divide design that was
okay. Do college requirements are there for a reason? What are they there for? Graduation. Any other reason?
Preparation.
The foundation. Those courses that we all take at the beginning that everybody hates, right? Go ahead and admit it. Those are preparatory. Those are the foundation as well. And when you start thinking about some of the things we're going to talk about today, you're going to have to go back, you'll digest it, and you'll begin to see it play out as you go through different pieces of the puzzle. It won't all become obvious at 9:40 today when we conclude. There are a lot of things that occur over the path of this, and all I want to do is begin to prepare you to start thinking and to well as be aware of how all this can play out and the impact it can have for you. Okay, so we've got all sorts of different people who are leaders. We've got a whole bunch of followers that follow our leaders and everything else. But why are they leaders? Why are they leaders?
They have the ability to round up all the followers.
They have the ability to corral all the followers. That's a good reason. Okay? Different pieces of this puzzle. Because when we think about leaders from a standpoint of looking at this and why they are leaders, let's go back to our political example. Some of them are leaders because they're elected, right? Right? That's one group of leaders. Others are leaders because they're appointed as leaders. Right? Nate, Samantha, you guys are leaders of this group because of your election to it. Right? You weren't appointed, you were elected to it by your peers and everything else. So they had some degree of trust in you, right?
I didn't have anybody running against me.
Well, you ran a really great campaign. What was that?
I didn't have anybody running against me.
Oh, darn. Unopposed. So you didn't have to mount a tremendous campaign, huh?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Some leaders are hired. Who do we hire as leaders?
CEOs.
Anybody else who hires leaders?
Department heads.
Department heads. College presidents. Coaches. Anybody else who hires leaders?
Professors.
Professors. Anybody else? Category of why they are leaders is sometimes leaders emerge. Sometimes leaders grow out of volunteer organizations. They just naturally gravitate to those positions. And so they can be elected, can be hired, can be volunteers that end up that way. They can be appointed in leadership roles. Any other reasons why people are leaders?
They'll take the initiative to make a decision.
Sometimes they're the ones that take the initiative to make a great insight in that. Because what happens in lots of big groups? Exactly. Sometimes we have a very difficult time in a group making a decision, right? Why is that? Why do people in groups have a difficult time making a decision?
Can't come to a consensus.
Can't come to a consensus? Any other fundamental reason?
They don't want to offend somebody else in the group.
They may not want to offend somebody else in the group.
No one really wants to stick their neck out.
Nobody wants to stick their neck out.
Afraid to voice their opinion.
Afraid to voice their opinion. Anything else? Anything from the front row? I'm going to pick on you guys just as well. The fundamental reason that people don't want to make a decision in a group is because they think they're going to have to do the job. It's like volunteering. Yeah, it's a great idea, but geez, I really hope they'll do it. You know, Nate, come on, stand up. We have a difficult time because we don't want to do those things. We think they're great ideas. Groups have a terrible time because coming to that. And so that's where leaders emerge out of groups, is because they're the ones that are saying, I'll do this. I'll pick it up, and everybody else will say, go for it. Do it. All those other pieces. The other piece of that question is, when do they leave? Who are they? Why? When? When do they leave? When do people leave?
Whenever a problem arises.
Whenever a problem arises. Any other reason?
When they see a need for reform.
Okay, when they see a need for reform. Any other reason? When people leave?
Really, anytime anyone's looking up to them for advice or for help.
Great. almost any time. Any time that they exercise, quote, this vague thing that we call leadership out there, when the whole group or even small groups need some voice or some direction, is when people leave. And so there are natural things that occur. And you watch some of the group dynamics, you'll be much more aware now of group dynamics and all of this. You watch it play out. It's really pretty fascinating when you start observing all of this. The other piece of this, are all leaders the same? Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's a good thing. Why? Why is it a good thing and all leaders are the same?
There's just so many different situations that make a lead.
Okay, everything is situational. Let's start with it. If all college football coaches were the same, what would the college football season be like? Boring. Nobody would make $2 million a year because everybody, you know, would all be mediocre. Sameness breeds mediocrity, in my opinion, as well. And so there needs to be some room for innovation. Why do some CEOs get paid a lot more than other CEOs? Make a company more profitable? They're better at what they do?
More creative.
What's that?
More creative.
More creative?
So the company doesn't lose them.
So the company doesn't lose them? Anybody know any CEOs?
Who's that a golf course?
All right. We've lots of interesting people in golf course. We can talk about that. Jack Welch come to mind? Anybody know who Jack Welch is? Former CEO of, anybody know what company? Make light bulbs.
GE.
GE, very good, thank you. Written several books, is considered one of the great leaders in terms of making people do what they need to do to turn around companies. Lee Iacocca. Some of you may not remember Lee Iacocca. He was from the first bailout program of the car industry, was hired in to run, maybe before your time. I have to start thanking myself.
Yeah.
noted for turning Chrysler around and everything else and all of this. Many other people, they're not all the same. They have common characteristics, but they have lots of differences. It's those common characteristics and differences that we want to spend some time talking about. And we think about this, you know, just kind of set this foundation. Why is leadership a foundation? Because you have to ask yourself several questions. What's it take to be a leader? What are the rewards? And what is the foundation? What's it take to be a leader?
Confidence.
It's one attribute. Anything else? What's that?
Initiative.
Maybe be a follower first.
Be a follower first?
Charisma.
Not a bad idea.
Charisma.
What's that? Charisma?
Communication skills.
Communication skills?
Responsibility.
Responsibility?
Perspective.
Consciousness.
What's that?
Consciousness.
Consciousness?
Just the willingness to be in front of a group and lead.
Okay. Willingness to step out and do something? Experience. Come to mind? You really want to lead a group on your first day, would you? Kind of want to know what the organization looks like. Any other reasons what it takes to be a leader?
Passion.
Somebody say passion?
Ability to make a decision.
Ability to make a decision. What happens when a decision is not made? Do we get frustrated? There's nothing more frustrating to some of us than the inability to make a decision. not only does our leadership skills come to mind, other things happen as well. I mean, when we can't make a decision, and a group can't make a decision. What are the rewards of being a leader? Discounting the big bonuses that CEOs get. What are the rewards of being a leader?
Trust.
Trust from others?
Respect.
Respect?
Satisfaction.
Satisfaction?
Accomplishment.
Accomplishment. Any other rewards?
Knowing that you helped other people.
What's that?
Knowing you helped other people.
Knowing you helped other people. Great piece of the puzzle. Sense at the end of the day is saying this group did something and I had a part of it. I'll just give you a little wide perspective on this. 1989, I was brought into Ames to run the National Soil Tilth Lab. I actually was in Lubbock, Texas before that. I was at the point at which we redirected federal employees from one place to another. My sole purpose and my authority given to me by the administration of the Agricultural Research Service at that time was to build a laboratory that was unlike other ARS laboratories that existed in our other locations. So I had my 007 type of card, which go do things that nobody else got to do. I had some authority and I had some potential within the agency that nobody else enjoyed in terms of looking at a staff, recruiting a staff, developing a research program. And it took 20 years, we actually moved that name. There's a reason for that name change from Soil Tilth to a lab for agriculture and the environment. And part of that is our changing mission of where we're going to go and how all those things fit together. So over 20 years, I've been directing that whole program in terms of having a national as well as an international impact. And so when you look at lots of different things, I can look back and say, this is what we've accomplished. But I don't look back and say, this is what I accomplished. This is what we accomplished as a group. Because there's only a small part of that that I'm responsible for. Part of the things that leaders have to have that we haven't talked about is the ability to make followers succeed. Leaders are only as good as their followers are good. So that becomes an interesting piece of the puzzle. We can only be as good as leaders as the followers that we have. Did it surprise Congress this summer when they went back to their home districts and found people had some rather strong opinions about health care? The word that comes to mind is shocked. Why were they shocked when people said, what are you guys trying to do? Anybody know why they were shocked? Everybody had been going with the flow. I think the Congress really underestimated what their constituents thought. If you ever get to go to D.C., you get to live in kind of this bubble. There's inside the Beltway is really a microcosm of itself. And I think politicians, particularly our elected representatives, lose touch with what the people want out there. They lose touch with their followers. And what they found this summer was that their followers had some pretty strong opinions about some things. And they go, what? And so they were quite confused for a while. They're still working through that confusion and everything else. The rewards at the end of the day are the fact that you have a sense of accomplishment. Sometimes it's nothing more than that. We don't get to take home a $10 million check at the end of the year for increasing bonuses or things like that, or anything else. You may get a pat on the back. You may get a nice certificate. You may get something else at the end of the day. But most of it when you really have to think about your rewards as a leader is what the group has done that you internalized. It's really about feeling good about what you had a role in doing. And can and do you have an impact on yourself at night? So the foundation of all of this, as we think about this, becomes quite interesting. And I just want to spend a little bit of time talking about four different leadership styles. Because you're going to see these, and you'll probably, in your own mind, you don't have to shout out names for me. You'll associate different names with different people along the way here. The first leadership style is directive. Okay, Dana held up her hand in the back. And why do you think she might be that directive leader?
Because there's 21 case studies.
Okay. What comes to mind when we say directive leadership? What's that? They know how to use their authority. Directing leaders. that's a good one. Chavez in Venezuela would be a directing type of leader, right? Other groups that come to mind in that are colonels, majors, captains, lieutenants in the army.
Telling people what to do.
That's right. They have no problem telling people when, where, and how it's to be done.
They have high levels of expectation.
It's not when you will take that hill, it's how you want that hill taken, sir. That's a directive leader. A lot of dialogue back and forth between followers and directive leaders? No. Are they really pleasant people to work for? No. Go ahead, raise your hand. No. Why aren't they pleasant people to work for? Go ahead. Not about Dana, but about directive leaders in general, okay?
Fun suckers.
Fun suckers, all right. Why are they fun suckers?
They may not tell you how to do it the way you want to do it.
Okay.
They're micromanagers.
They're micromanagers?
A lot of times they'll push you past your boundaries or things that you think you can do.
Okay.
They're intimidating.
I often get accused of being intimidating. I just don't know where that comes from. You had a comment?
Well, it's either it's their way or the highway.
All right. Now we get down to the bottom of it. Their way is the way. So they are fun suckers. You know, that's a great way to make notes of that. You know, because in a directive leader, it's really about getting this job done. They don't care how you feel. They don't care anything else about that. The job is to get it done. And whether you've got an opinion about a better way to do that or not, that didn't even enter the mix, folks. Yeah, I'm sorry. You might have an opinion, but guess what? Keep it to yourself. Because that is not up for debate. We're not having a meeting about this. We're not having a discussion about it. This is what we're getting done. And so that's directing leader. Now, an analytical leader. Do we know what an analytical leader is?
Someone that takes everything into account.
Takes everything into account. Okay.
Is it one where they think more about the situation?
Okay, they think about the situation.
Analyze consequences of the decisions.
They analyze consequences of the decision. They analyze pieces of the puzzle over and over again. One of the things that comes to mind when I think about analytical people, the first thing that always pops in my mind on this is lead CPAs and actuarials, because analytical leaders are probably the most frustrating people to work for, because they have a tendency to do what? Overanalyze everything. And so they're going to analyze A, B, C, and let's throw D, F in just for fun. And by the way, we haven't considered G and E, G and H yet. And so analytical leaders are good in different situations at times that understand the pros and cons and probability of risk and failure and all of these different things along the way, and you know, public opinion polls and how it all fits together. But they're extremely frustrating to work for because they're probably the slowest to make a decision. There's always one more risk analysis to be done. Will people react to this? Analytical techs are generally not in charge of ad agencies, okay? Let's put it in that perspective for you. Now, these next two are the much more of the kinder, gentler leaders, okay? Supporting leaders. What would a supporting leader be?
Counselor.
What's that?
A counselor.
A counselor, okay, that's one.
Teacher.
A teacher. Why are they supportive? What comes to mind when you say the word supporting leader?
Someone who takes into account their followers' needs.
Okay, takes into account their followers' needs. It's very good.
They encourage.
They encourage their followers. The thing that comes to mind when we say supporting leadership is leaders of groups of volunteers. Because that's almost oxymoronic, you think about it. A leader of a group of volunteers. Because if you're a group of volunteers, what can you do? You can walk away anytime, right? So one of the biggest challenges you have if you've got a group of volunteers is what? Keeping the volunteers around. Otherwise, guess what? You end up doing what? All the work yourself. Had situations like that this year?
No, not really.
Good. Super. Great testimony. Because oftentimes in volunteer organizations, guess what? The volunteers just kind of disappear. And left, who's left doing the work? So why do those leaders really need to be supported? A, to keep volunteers happy. Any other reason? What else do volunteers do? Back to your fun sucking thing.
Keep it light.
Keep it light and happy. They actually put the fun back into doing some projects, right? They really begin to look at it, but they really understand what their followers want, and their followers are encouraged by it. Supportive leaders, when we get into this, really think about much more of the people that are within the organization compared to the organization. Major difference in that. Directed people. Only about the organization. People are merely objects on that chessboard. It's made a difference between supporting and directing. How they react and how they do that. Promoting leaders. Who are they promoting? Who might promoted leaders be promoted? Like a business? Okay.
Themselves?
So, well, generally not. Directed leaders do a really good job with themselves. Okay?
An idea or a concept?
The idea or concept? Actually, put it a little different way for you. Promoted leaders promote the followers. Promoted leaders promote the followers. They really build the leaders from within the organization. If you want a group that really succeeds over time, have a promoted leader at the head of it. And you think about this just for a second. We'll come at this in a little bit as we go through this. But one of the things about promoted leadership is that I care more about you than I care about me. That's kind of an interesting concept, isn't it? The parentheses behind this, you think about promoting leadership as being servant leadership. My role is to serve the organization and serve people in that organization more than itself. Directed leaders, they really care at times what your problem is. Your servant leader goes out. You really do care about your opinion and everything else. I'll give you a true life story on this. When I was at Lubbock, we were running an experiment because I headed up the plant stress and water conservation lab at that time before I moved back to Ames. We were trying to discover how to understand plant stress. And how to quantify that. So we had a whole group of people working on that. We worked all the way from biochemistry to molecular genetics and the field of physiology, a number of different groups. And we'd sit down and we designed this experiment to be able to test a lot of different concepts in the field. But as scientists, we sat down and we talked about it and we had it all worked out. We failed to bring in one very important group into this discussion, and that was the technical staff. The technical staff got their impressions of that experiment from each of the scientists working in that project. And so for the whole summer, needless to say, it was a little chaotic in the field because this technical staff were trying to do this and this technical staff were trying to do that and they were butting heads because they didn't understand what the big picture was. They didn't have a clue. They only had their perspective from whatever the scientists told them. And so we had to rethink our whole approach to doing this in terms of, even in science, at times you've got to have an entirely different group of inclusion in order to make the whole thing work. It's a living example of disaster that went on. We spent hours and hours over the summer collecting all this and yet had no papers at the end of it because we couldn't get anything to work out. Because we just didn't have those pieces that came together. And so, true life examples that you go back and you think, we should have done it differently. And so a lot of times promoted leaders are much more inclusive in terms of bringing people in to discuss, to bringing people in to share ideas, to ask their opinions on a number of different pieces. Directed leader, my opinion, is the only thing that counts because I know what needs to get done. You listen to the verbiage. And you start listening to people talk. And you'll be able to, just by the how they use the pronouns, I versus we at the end of that stage. I'm going to do this. I'm going to take care of this problem. I'm going to do this. Promoting and the supporting leaders is much more we, the group, number of different things. It's an inclusive type of discussion. And just watch that happen. You'll be able to start listening to conversations that go around, and you'll be able to pick out people's leadership style just by how they answer certain questions. Very, very amazing when you get into this. Now, are we always pinned to the same leadership style? No. Why not?
Sometimes it depends on who else is in the group.
Yeah, it depends on what that group of followers look like, whether they need a heavy hand or a kind or gentle hand. Anything else?
Sometimes it depends on, sometimes there's someone who's a very strong leader, and they're not going to let you be the leader of the group. So you would make a better follower than a leader in that position.
Yeah, sometimes there's a little headbutting going on in that.
Depends on the situation.
Okay, depends on the situation. Can directing leaders be promoted leaders?
Yeah.
How so? Maybe. How so?
Depends on who their followers are and what purpose they have for the situation.
Sometimes it depends on the task at hand, right? If something has to get done and there's a deadline and everything else, people that are sometimes promoted leaders have to become directed leaders. Folks, we just got to get this taken care of. So sometimes the decision just has to be there. And somebody has to step up, develop the timeline chart, and say, you guys are going to do this, you're going to do that, you're going to do this, and this is how it's all coming together. But I like you anyway. Throw a little bit of promoting piece in there just so everybody feels good at the end of the day. And so all of this becomes very, very important when you think about this. Because are all styles the same? Of course not. They're all different. We're all different. I see myself in lots of different roles at times. There are days that I just have to be a directed leader. I'm sorry, that's the way it is. But most of the time, I'm much more in a promoting piece of the puzzle in terms of servant leadership. When do we have to apply those different styles? It's a situation. It really is situational. The other piece of this is this issue of serving versus directing. I'm a big fan of servant leadership. Spent a lot of time in the servant leadership role in lots of different ways. Because I found that when you put yourself in the job of serving others, A, you get respect for it, B, you get a lot more accomplished at the end of the day. Because people realize that you value them. At the end of the day, even as followers, we want to be valued. We don't want to be treated as collateral or casualties in some cases. We want to be valued as what? Individuals. We want to be valued as members of that organization. Because I can tell you what happens in organizations when people don't feel valued. When people don't feel valued as members of organizations, they do what? They quit being members of that organization. They find other jobs, they find other groups to volunteer for, they find other things to occupy their time. People are a valuable asset. One of the things that I have a real problem with is the whole description of the word human capital. I just don't believe that is what we ought to be referring to people as. Human capital. You're a human asset. You're a vital part of the organization, but think of you as a capital like a building or a piece of machinery or an analytical piece of equipment or anything, or a plot combine or anything else that's out there. I just don't think it's how we ought to be referring to people. You're human assets. You're assets to the organization. And so all of this in there. In order to be a strong leader, we've got to be extremely flexible in all of this. This now gets personal to you all. How do you develop leadership? Because at the point of your careers in which we're going to talk about this, the role of observation and the role of mentoring. The role of observation, you learn a lot by observing, right? What do you observe? What do you learn by observing?
How not to do it.
How not to do it, okay. On the flip side? How to do it, okay, very good. How not to do it? Maybe how to do it. Anything else we learn by observing?
You can kind of draw from a lot of different pools and combine a bunch of different methods into the best way.
Sure. you have to develop your style, right? You have to understand what you're doing. Anything else you learn by observing?
A certain thing, interact with each other.
Yeah.
Different groups and somebody else.
How the followers react.
There are certain things that you go in as leaders at times that I spend a lot of time reading the crowd. Because why is that important?
You have to adapt.
You have to adapt. Sometimes I know who the vocal ones are, who those that need more encouragement. You read the crowds from lots of different reasons. It becomes very fascinating just to watch the crowd dynamics at times. Because sometimes you've been brought into roles to maybe do some different things. And the first thing I do is, everybody always thinks I'm really loud and obnoxious and talking all the time. But in reality, I spend a lot of time in meetings just listening and observing. Because I understand what the crowd dynamics are and all of this. The other piece of this is the role of mentoring. Mentoring is one of the things that we need to get back to doing. Everybody needs a mentor. I even have mentors. At the end of my career, I still have people that I can call and talk to about various situations that are outside of the laboratory, that are outside of the situation, that I can explain things to and say, I just need to talk to someone else about the people that are driving me nuts, okay? That's one of the roles of a mentor. They're the ones that kind of give you, they don't make a decision for you, they bounce ideas, they listen to you, they're like an unpaid psychiatrist, right? But they are valuable for your sanity to have a mentor. Because sometimes we learn by listening to other people. And that's the role of a mentor. Everybody needs a mentor. Whether you're beginning in a job, end of your career, mentorship is a big piece of this. And when you develop leadership, really you have people that you need to look at and identify three or four people that you can talk to about this, that understand the situation. And people are very flattered when you ask them if you know, well, they meant, you know, will you be my mentor? And will you help me? And it's a lost art. We need to be doing more of that. I really think that that's one of the things we've lost in all of this. The stages of leadership development, and I just put four of them out there because right now I would characterize most of this room except for a few people sitting around here, as in the growing stage. You are in the growing stage of your leadership. And the reason I put you in the growing stage of your leadership is because you're exploring, you're understanding, you're trying to figure all of this out. You're growing, you're trying different things. If you had to do the presidency another year, Nate, would you do things differently?
You bet.
You bet. All right, nothing like experience. Growing is in terms of that initial phase. You explore all sorts of things. We need to have the capabilities of being able to try and fail in low-risk situations. And so growing and everything else. And then you get into the next stage is developing leadership. And the growing phase is really where you're at today. The developing phase is often that beginning stage of your professional career, the post-school thing. You may be asked to do some things in projects, say you go to work for a seed company or a chemical company or a consulting company, or even in graduate school at times, that's a place in which you're asked to assume, again, some leadership roles. People want to see how you're going to react in various situations. It's not throwing you to the wolves to see what's going to happen, but trying to throw you out into different situations to see how you handle things, how you handle certain things, how you handle yourself in all of this. So that's that developing phase. And then a lot are in this maturing stage of leadership. Been there, done that, sort of thing. Been exposed to different situations, you've worked on different things, that's where those different leadership styles, directive, analytical, supportive, promoting, you really know kind of who you are and what you have, because you're thrust into roles for lives that have to use those situations. And then the final stage is the giving stage. And you think, what are you talking about, the giving stage of leadership? It's a book by Buford called Halftime. It's about your life, the second half of your life. I read it not too long ago, and it's very insightful in terms of that we need to move from that current stage of our what we're at, or where we're at, to the giving stage. And that's really, as a personal note, where I am. It's really more about giving. I can't go any higher in government. Well, I can't, but I refuse to move to Washington. It's really about giving back to various organizations. My tenure as the president of ASA is really about giving back to the organization. Some of the things that I do otherwise are about giving back. This is about giving back, because how do you begin to take the experiences and help other people develop through those? That's really what it becomes. It's really about taking and moving beyond where we're at today to give back to an organization. You'll see this as you go through, because all of these different pieces are part of the puzzle. It's the growing stage, the developing stage, the maturing stage, and finally the giving stage are those different stages in leadership. And we may all keep the same styles, but in reality, we change how we reflect upon the organization. Or change how we reflect upon that. Now we get down to the critical question of all of this. And that's the foundation of what we are. Because what you are and what you contribute to the organization really depends upon your core beliefs. I can't answer that for you. But just let me throw out some core beliefs to you. How do you value things like honesty? How do you value people that are honest towards you? You know, think about your core beliefs of what help you sleep well at night. That's the easiest way for me to say what your core beliefs are. You know. What are some of the other values that you bring? What do you value in life? That's your foundation. What do you value in life?
Lots of money.
Feeling good about yourself? Nice red sports car? Oh, no. You know, what do you value in life? Those are your core beliefs. Those are the ones that guide you through your life. That's what you have. That's the way you build your foundation. You value other people. You value what people think. You want to be accepted. You know, if you go out of a meeting in which you had to make a decision and you feel bad about yourself, what does that say? It says maybe the meeting didn't go quite so well, right? You guys probably haven't experienced that, but believe me, you will. It always happens in everybody's life. There are certain things that happen to us that just cause us really reflect upon who we are. And so I urge you, really sit down and think about what your core beliefs are, because that's your foundation of leadership. Because here's the bottom line. Your core beliefs determine how you react under stress. When you're put to the stress test, your core beliefs are what come out. Turn over to the front of the handout I gave you. It says, no matter where you go in life, remember you are in control of how you react to every situation. Leaders are always in control of themselves. No charge for that quote. You're in control of how you react. If somebody makes you mad in a meeting, how are you going to react? If somebody makes a decision that you don't like, how are you going to react? They have to blow up in the meeting, blow up afterwards. Leaders are always in control of themselves. Never forget that. Leaders are always in control of everything else. There's tons of information on leadership. Unfortunately, we don't teach classes in universities on leadership. It's probably one of our great mistakes that we have. There are leadership institutes that you can go to. There's all sorts of ones. And if Harvard Business School puts on a really nice six-week program, it only costs you $10K. After that, it was $10K. It's probably $12 or $13 now. I've been to month-long training programs that are quite interesting in this. There's a number of different things that we have, but in reality, it still comes back to who you are as a leader. Who you are. If you just look at that last page of that, I have a favorite author, and John Maxwell is one of my favorite authors. He's written a lot of books on leadership. He has a whole group that deals with leadership from different perspectives and everything, and he's worked with a lot of Fortune 500 companies in this. And what I did is I took out of his one book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, and just gave you the chapter titles and what they mean, and because that may be a way in which you go look at that. Actually, it's a fairly old book. You think about 1998, 11 years now. Time flies when you're having fun. I just give you a couple perspectives out of the chapter titles there. And that his first chapter in that book is The Law of the Lid. And The Law of the Lid says leadership ability determines a person's level of effectiveness. And you just sit and think about that just for a second in all of this. Is that we can always continue to develop our leadership skills. We don't have to stop at where we're at the growing phase. We can continue to develop them over time. We can continue to develop them even through that maturing phase. We can continue to develop them through that giving phase. So leadership ability doesn't stop. It's not like calculus, okay? You know, you can always continue to learn new things about leadership. The other piece of that, going down in there, trust is the foundation of leadership. No matter what group you've got, whether you're a directive leader, an analytical leader, a supportive leader, or a promoted leader, it's all about trust. You've got to have that trust of the people that you work with. You've got to have the trust within yourself. You've got to have trust within people of that organization. Because what happens when you don't have trust? What happens when people don't trust their leader? They're not going to follow. What else happens?
They get kicked out of their leadership.
They get kicked out of their leadership. That often happens. Anything else? Word revolt come to mind, uprisings, little chaotic things like this. If people don't trust their leaders, good things don't happen. I mean, it's an entirely different part of the process. And the other one that I'll call your attention to is this one called Law of Sacrifice. sometimes leaders must give of it to get up. We have to put ourselves aside. And that's that promoted leader and supported leader. Sometimes you've got to put yourself aside for the health and the wealth of the organization in order for it to succeed. Really good, strong leaders know when to do certain things. And I'm sorry, there is not a recipe card that I can give you that says, here's the five things that are going to occur when you've got to do these different pieces. Leadership is basically about instinct, it's about reaction, and it's about how you're balancing things against that core belief. So, on that long ride back to Manhattan, or Ames, do you guys drive now? Wheat crop must have really been good this year. It'll give you something to think about. What are your core beliefs? I would urge you to go and start making your list. Every leadership book, I don't care which one you read, always has a chapter on values. Always has this basic underlying piece of it. It's not too early to start thinking about what are your core values. I go back to your comment early, and that's a fact. Who do you view as leaders? Your parents. What do our parents instill into us? Values. Our parents instill that basic set of framework that we take to our long term. Our college instructors do. Our high school teachers do. When we begin to realize that they are instilling more into us than just the educational material. That comes back and fits that role of observation. That role of observation is extremely critical. You think about what are you observing? And you watch people in different situations, you watch all these different pieces. All of it becomes a very interesting piece of the puzzle. And so you go back, we have some wonderful discussions about this. You can share all sorts of things. To me, it's where you really begin. Because I've been extremely fortunate in my whole life. I've been fortunate in lots of different reasons. But one thing that's been very fortunate is the ability to be able to help other people understand what it takes to help them succeed. Jack Welch wrote a book on high-performing organizations. Go to Barnes & Noble, go to Borders, go to any of the bookstores, you'll find that you'll back in the leadership section, there are tons and tons of books. My wife finally made me quit buying leadership books. I have a whole library for them that are fascinating to read. And they have all sorts of pieces of the puzzle. But I'd urge you to just really begin to think about how you apply this in lots of different places. Because your future and your success in life depends on it. This is a course, this is a lecture, that will be a test. And it won't be a test today, it'll be a test for the rest of your life. That's what you got to start putting into practice. So with that, thank you.